Thank you, Matthias. I realized on while I was walking up here today that what I'm really doing today is giving a sort of progress report on a mini workshop that we held here at Fields 3 or 4 years ago, I think. And fortunately, the progress is nice, and some of it has just only recently been completed during the workshop. So I want to try to work that in for sure. So some of this is going to be fairly old news in some ways. The results of this workshop got written up as they got written up as something that I was calling an unpublished note. Patrick and I wrote this up. It's been on my web page for a while. One of the reasons why it didn't turn into a paper is because I always thought it was a pre-theorem. I mean, there was a nice result, but it wasn't quite, there was something annoying about it that needed to be cleaned up. And it's been cleaned up, or at least a good part of it has, just very recently by some work here at the Institute. So now we'll really be able to do something with this. So the setting is we're going to let R be a minimal expansion of the field of reals. So this will be in the background. And then what I want to have is a definable C1 vector field, planar vector field, say on, for convenience, let's say a punctured disk at the origin. Actually, C1 is overkill on this, but anything else, locally Lipschitz takes too long to say, so we're going to stick with C1. So we'll have a solution. To the vector field. And I'm going to make up front, because sometimes I give the wrong impression that I've somehow managed to solve the center focus problem. I certainly don't want to do that. We are assuming that this trajectory does in fact go to zero. So this is always up front. And I want to look at the image of this, of the solution. Oh, as to, well, it goes to zero as either I go to down to A or up to B, depending on convenience. And so the question is, what about the expansion of the structure by the trajectory? So what can we say about these things? And I'll use the word trajectory here, although I'm sure in a talk on vector field theory, I'm bound to contradict somebody's notation in some book somewhere. By trajectory at this point, I'm really thinking of the image, I guess it's sometimes called orbit or solution curve or whatever. So, but I'll just use the word trajectory. But we are thinking about this as a geometric object sitting inside. So the parameterization has nothing to do with this, although we have it for convenience. Okay, so what are the kind of things that could happen here? Well, certainly, it could be O-minimal. Okay, we have lots and lots of examples of this now. And in fact, there's, by Pfaffian closure, there's a biggest thing that's closed under things. And the important thing is here is that, so, in fact, we'll say it this way, even all O-minimal trajectories over my fixed structure are, say, mutually ominimal. Right? So once if I've got any decently behaved trajectories, all of them live in one joint ominimal structure. Right? So this has been known for a while. And there's a little fact here that, well, part of it is just a little bit of ominimal calculus, and then the other part is this big theorem due to Patrick. But we're going to use this, and again, this is something that's been known. Because we're in the plane, we know that we're ominimal if and only if my trajectory is Pfaffian, which basically means non-oscillatory. And then by playing around a little bit with this, this is just all we need to know for this is that the limit of the unit secants exists. So this is what Adam Parashinsky was calling has a tangent at the origin, right? So all we have to do is find some definite direction that we come in on, and then we'll have ominimality. Okay, well, great. Old news, right? Well, what if it's not ominimal? So this is actually going to be more or less the focus of the talk today. Because, I approached this subject originally, I mean, as a model theorist, as a logician, and I certainly like ODE theory a lot, but I guess I think differently about some of these things. And so once I know that you can add trajectories and have some kind of nice behavior, I want to know, well, what happens with other ones. So that's what I want to talk about today. And the first thing it's not ominimal, the gamma spirals to zero. since I'm sort of just reviewing a lot of stuff here, I want to try to keep this sort of loose so I can work in the new stuff. And also, it's not clear to me whether my voice will last for the whole hour. So the speaker may quit early. We'll see. So what do I mean by spirals to zero? Well, I mean this in just a naive sense. I'm not going to try to give some geometric definition for this that's difficult. It's just if I have a polar parameterization, then theta goes to plus minus infinity. That's all I'm going to ask. And remember, I've already assumed, always assuming, that I'm going to zero anyway. There are fidgets you can do if you don't do that, but I don't want to get into too many technical details today. Well, how does this work? I mean, and I'm sure there are a number of people in this room who are well familiar with this fact for analytic vector fields, right? You either have a characteristic direction or you have to spiral. And the normal proof there is you pass to polar coordinates and you look at your order of vanishing and just start analyzing things. Here, this vector field could even be flat. We're making no assumptions on it at all, except that it's definable in a nominal structure. But having C1 cell decomposition around is more than adequate to compensate for not knowing what the Taylor series is. And so we just do this. So here's a sketch of the proof. We basically just, we take C1 cell decomposition, compatible with, well, everything in sight that I think might be useful, but let's say the individual coordinates of F, these are the projections, and let's say the radial and spherical derivatives. Which are definable, of course. So I go ahead and I decompose my disk. And we get sort of the usual kind of picture here. where these guys are going to be nice. These are parameterized definably as C1 curves. On each of the big pieces, I have some fixed sign condition going on with everything. And so we'll pick one of these things for the moment. Let's call this one C. And the set of points on here where I'm tangent to the vector field . This is definable, either geometrically or because we literally now do have a parameterization for this for the cell, and I could actually just check to see if it's where it is tangent to the vector field. Now, because we're in a no-minimal structure, so the set of points, if I actually had a set of tangent points marching down to the origin, then I could shrink the ball so that gamma would actually have to be contained in here. Or at least, well, all of this would have to be contained in gamma, but of course we're talking about trajectories, so right, once they intersect, they would have to be the same. We've already ruled out that it's not there by this proposition. So what that means is that I shrink this down, and either gamma avoids this thing altogether, or I'm transverse at all points and in some particular direction, because I can test that too definably. We just check the angle that the vector field is making. So I get a picture where I have this kind of stuff that we see when we start looking at Poincaré-Bendixson theory. So the case that I avoid, avoid one of these guys entirely is actually the easy one. So let's postpone that for a minute. So if I wind up getting this picture where the arrows are all going in the same direction, then of course I wind up with a spiral. Well, how do I get the polar parameterization? Well, I integrate something and, you know, we do the analysis and that's it. So of course, if we don't have that, then what happens is we're going to get this kind of picture. So it's a trap or something, right? And so we know intuitively that once I come into here, I can't get out again. Okay? So now, basically at this point, I'm looking for a contradiction, because what I'm claiming is that either I'm Pfaffian or I have to be a spiral. So at this point now I want a contradiction. So say if the trajectory comes in here, it certainly has to avoid this thing now. It can't get over here. So if it comes in, it's going to have to start doing some stuff like this, but that's going to violate the sign conditions on the spherical derivatives by intermediate value theorem arguments. Okay, so yeah, this is a sketchy, but you know, it's basic O-minimal calculus here, not too much going on. So we have this fundamental split dealing with trajectories. Either I'm Pfaffian, in which case I'm O-minimal, or I'm some kind of spiral.
Why does it have to go backwards and forwards? Go straight down to the middle.
Because if it did that, then the limit of the secants would exist, contradicting my global assumption that I probably shouldn't have done. This is a case distinction. If it did what you just suggested, then I'm going to be O-minimal. Because what does it mean to say that the limit of the secants doesn't exist, right? I would have a lim inf and lim sup in the angles, and I would have to come back and forth. Another way to see this, by the way, is that once I would have this picture, then certainly I would have a sequence of points coming in where the vector field is pointing toward the origin. Then I would get a definable curve coming in. That would have to be a trajectory, also a contradiction. All right, so either way you want to make this argument, we wind up with the spiral stuff. Now, as a result of this argument, I said, well, if in fact at the beginning I managed to disconnect my set entirely and my trajectory had to be contained in here, then it's this argument again. Right? So in essence, so one of the things this immediately does is, well, we certainly might study vector fields with singularities on the boundary rather than stuck in the middle like this, but if I'm disconnected by a curve like this, well, then it's even easier, right? As long as if I'm coming in like from one direction, then I know I'm going to get trapped and everything's going to be fine. So this reduction to working in the classical isolated singularity case is the right one to start with. Okay. Fine. So let's go ahead and assume gamma is a spiral. Yeah, shot myself on that one. Well, that's all right. So we've got some kind of picture like this, more or less, topologically. We have the return map. Let's see, do I want to go? Yeah, that's fine. We'll have the return map existing here, the Poincaré return map and everything. So, of course, certainly when I intersect the spiral with the positive real axis, I'm going to get something with infinitely many connected components. So, yes, again, certainly we are not ominimal, so that's not an issue. But the question is, now, and here I think I should talk a little bit about logic and some, sort of fairly recent history of some of these things. So the idea is that once I add this spiral, I'm getting an infinite discrete set definable in my structure. And basically for a long time, and certainly most logicians, if they see something like this, their instinct is immediately going to go up and think, this looks very bad. The gut reaction is that once, if I've got an infinite discrete set in there, I must be able to define the integers or something horrible. And that intuition sort of held for quite a while until actually, and it's part of what my talk will do today is kind of vindicate, I think, to some extent, this intuition. Yes, it turns out there are some exceptions when things don't go bad, but most of the time I think they probably do. And so Van Andries showed, I guess back in the mid-80s, I would say, that you can add, if you were lucky enough that this happened to be a cyclic multiplicative group, for example, if this were a logarithmic spiral, you can always add a cyclic multiplicative group to the field of real numbers, and you'll even get decidability relative to the generator, right? And you get a quantifier elimination result, and you can bust up the definable sets, and you can actually make sense of the things that, well, things don't go so bad in the following sense. What you can prove is that in any model of the theory, in any elementarily equivalent structure, every definable set in one variable is a finite union, is a disjoint union of open intervals and finitely many discrete sets. So there is still a finiteness condition here. It's a finiteness of Cantor-Bennigsen rank condition, basically. And then by model theoretic compactness, you get a uniform bound on these numbers of discrete sets that could show up. You even also get a sort of countable, well, actually, so this was a, I'm getting off track here. I was actually quite fascinated by this paper when Lau gave it to me, and I realized that with recent developments going on at the time that through this valuation theory and model theoretic stuff, you could actually add these groups to any O-minimal structure, provided that they did not define any irrational powers. If you define an irrational power, then immediately something goes wrong, because you would get two different multiplicative groups here, and then you would get a dense codense set, so something's looking fishy. And then Patrick and I realized one day, as I recall, we were actually trying to show that this was bad, that, of course, once you have sort of one loop of the spiral and the group, you can more or less recover all of it definably. I'm being a little bit sloppy here. But so in particular, if you take this famous structure R sub n, which is the expansion of the field of reals by all, I guess, say, well, these restricted analytic functions, which I guess is the same as all compact subanalytic sets, I think. Well, restricted analytic functions. So you can, once you do this, you can add the inner, if you have a log spiral, so I'm calling them this these days. So if I have a log spiral, then this guy has this nice property that, for lack of a better word, I called D minimal. And so the D here is for discrete minimal, and in analogy with O minimal, the idea is that the only definable sets in one variable are the ones that are forced to be there because you have some infinite discrete sets living there. O minimal means order minimal. The only definable sets that are there are the ones that are forced on you by having the less than relation and constants around. That's it. So while it's easier for me to say this model theoretically, in every elementarily equivalent structure, it's really a definition about theories. Every unary definable set is a disjoint union of intervals and finitely many discrete sets. So by using the uniformity of this business, you can come back here, and actually this picture is supposed to suggest that there should be a kind of countable cell decomposition for these structures, and there is. Great. So at least some spirals, and of course I should, of course, this is a trajectory of, let's see if I'll get it. As I recall, it's this thing. So it's a trajectory of a linear vector field, so certainly definable. And so we have an example where we add a spiral and things go as nicely as they possibly can. I mean, this is my contention at the moment, is that without having to make boatloads of technical assumptions, which you certainly could if you wanted to, this is as best as you could possibly do. So in fact, this same thing holds if I replace R sub n with my script R, provided that there's no irrational powers around. So, but I want to make a disclaimer before I move on from here. So, I needed a convenient word because I didn't want to run around saying this all the time. I have not pushed this thing as a sort of concept the way O-minimality was being pushed, because I was never convinced that it was all that robust. And at least in the setting that we're talking about here in this workshop, one of the things I hope to convince you of today is that these are very special. This is a very special situation. So if we're going to look at the subject from the standpoint of vector field theory, the idea is not to develop abstract properties of abstract d-minimal structures, but to actually look at these guys themselves. So, which is not to say that people can't study abstract d-minimal structures if they want. My point is just that I don't think that's the way to make headway in this game. There might be other arenas where this will work out differently, but right now, so I'm not pushing this as a new subject necessarily. No, necessarily not. Now, a nice counterpoint to this if I have an irrational power around and a log spiral, I immediately get the integers. Well, not sort of immediately necessarily. But now things have gone as badly as they possibly can go. And let me just say, most people have heard of this before. The problem is once you have the integers on top of the field structure, you can do Borel coding. So you get all Borel sets, then all projections of Borel sets, complements of projections, and so on. Next thing you know, you're asking questions that are independent of set theory, like whether all definable sets are Lebesgue measurable. So this is the worst possible outcome, is that you have the integers around, at least in the standpoint of that model theory as currently practiced is not going to be of any help. Something else would have to be done. So, and I should say now, where did this come from? Well, this is actually, in this form, this is due to Philip Aronini, who not nailed this here at the workshop or during the program. And this is actually a corollary of something else that's of interest. If I have two spirals, and they're not just rational power images of each other, then again we get the integers. And the reason why this is a corollary is, of course, once I have an irrational power, I'll get another spiral just by taking powers. So this tells us that actually, now, if I were to throw arctangent in here, or restricted sine, this was actually due to my student Michael, who had come up with... So Philip and Michael's results aren't completely comparable. They're both very nice to have around. And this is actually something, a corollary of something even more of, something even more astounding, I would say, which I won't try to mention right at the moment, but I'll bring up later. You see, there was a question around for a long time. If I intersect these things with the positive real axis, I'm going to get two different cyclic groups. And there was all the way back in Lau's paper when he did this with for one group, there was a question about what happens if you have two of them. And this remained open for a long time, and part of the problem is that those of us that had been looking at it foolishly thought this had something to do with groups deep number theory or something subtle. And in fact, there's a very easy topological reason why this doesn't work. And I'll say a little bit more about that, I hope, later. I don't want to say too much about it because, at some point Philip should be talking about this. But it's definitely going to, this result is certainly going to change the picture here a lot. So one of the things we see already is that if I try to start adding trajectories more than one at a time, well, here's one. Irrational powers, their graphs are certainly trajectories of linear fields. And so we have to be careful what we add here. There's going to be a tight constriction on what happens if we try to do too much. Oh, and in fact, I should also say that this is more my kind of style of stuff. If I'll just say it this way, if gamma even looks too much like a spiral, then we're cooked. Well, then the spiral will be definable. So let me not put it that way. I'll just add a moreover or something here. And what I mean by this is that if the trajectory is behaving asymptotically, like a log spiral, after you straighten it out, take a linear transformation, and when you get close enough to the origin, you'll be a sort of straightened out spiral. You can reparameterize by distance to the origin and basically split the spiral off using homomorphism properties. Okay. So we have a situation where we can have things as good as possible. If I throw an irrational power in here, I have things are as bad as possible. Is there anything in between? My conjecture is no, that you either have to be as bad as possible, or you're one of these guys, or you're O-minimal. So that's the rough conjecture. But let me give a little bit more sort of evidence for this. Certainly gamma can be bad on its own, meaning okay, so it might not need any other help to define the integers. And how would this come about? Well, we come back over to our picture now and just think of this as an abstract spiral. Once again, I intersect with the positive real axis. Now I'm going back to my sort of logician's instinct that infinite discrete sets are scary things when you have a field structure around. So what I've got now, I start looking at the set of distances, the displacement as I go in, and if that looks too much like anything arithmetic as opposed to geometric, then we have various bags of tricks built up over years, I suppose, to extract the integers from it. And so I want to do an example of this in a little bit of detail that should be familiar. Certainly the class of things where this is coming from will be familiar to some of the people in this room. Basically, again, I'm not always sure about the terminology, but if I have an analytic perturbation of a center, then we're going to get the integers out of it. So let me just, so in fact, I'll give a polynomial example. We'll make it go to the origin instead of go. I don't care really normally what direction. I don't care if I'm coming or going. And I usually don't know. Okay. There. So here's a nice polynomial vector field. Pretty easy to see what the linear part is. The eigenvalues are plus minus I. It's already in normal form. So in other words, I have, I think if I put the sign on it here, it'll be okay. And so these are familiar problematic objects to people here. It could be a center, of course, so let's make sure it isn't. If I take a solution, and hopefully I'll do my calculus right, and I came out with this, so my trajectories, all solutions do in fact go to the origin. And we know, of course, f is certainly analytic, it's a polynomial, and the only zero, well, oh. Ah, that's a little problem, isn't it? Aha. Oh, I guess I have to do something else to it. Yes. Well, in any case, normally when you're in this class, all I wanted to do was make sure and find one of them that actually does go to the origin. But the point here is that normally when you put these things together, if you're analytic and you have purely imaginary eigenvalues, the problem is I guess I've introduced some zeros coming in elsewhere, but I don't think this is, I think you can get rid of those. The point is that the return map, I'll say should, because now I just realized there's this little problem, should extend analytically to the origin. Okay. Yeah, okay. As I said, it. Right. Okay, yes, that I wasn't remember if I could simply quote by saying once you know you have these eigenvalues, then you can always do it, but. Okay, yes. Thank you. In any case, so this famous return map, which is the thing that when I, you know, which tells me when I come here, I come back to here, we know it's analytic on the open interval because we're starting with an analytic vector field, and return map has the same differentiability class. But you can, by, again, using this argument of doing, we have this is so-called elementary singularity, you blow things up, you can show nice things happen after a blow up and bring it back. So the return map is analytic. So what is that good for? All right. Well, what it's good for is that I can actually get my hands on something to compute. Okay. So, in other words, what I have, so if I'll use Perko's notation, so Px is my return map, say, and this is at least like on something like so, and what we know is by analyticity, I have a nice asymptotic relation. I'm going to write something weaker than what I actually have. So I have an asymptotic relationship like this. Now, of course, by analyticity, I actually know this is going to be a natural number, but that's of no consequence in what I'm about to do. Okay, so in other words, the displacement looks roughly like a power that's bigger than 1 as I go down to the origin. Well, now I can do some tricks. And this is... There's some people in this room, like, say, I think Dmitry Novikov, for example, who I've pestered for years about how do I get I want quantitative things on this error term so that I can, you know, pull off certain things. But the claim now, and here's why I usually want this information, is that not only does the spiral itself define the integers, but any intersection with the transversal close enough to the origin will also do it. So, so even sort of germ-wise, even if I just look at the intersection with the transversal, I get the integers. And so you can't escape this by easy methods. So what's the idea? Eventually, if I'm giving a talk, some sort of Hardyfield ideas have to come up sooner or later, and sort of here they are. The rough intuition is that, well, you do have to do a little work with this, but it's not really anything that you wouldn't necessarily find, say, in Spivak's calculus book for good students. Not calculus on manifolds, the other one. But the idea is that if I go ahead and label my points, So we'll pick one and start iterating the map and going in. So AK plus 1 is equal to the return map of AK. So I'm going to iterate this and go in. Now I'm getting a discrete set that's closed in the positive real line. It's certainly definable. So if you mess around with this a little bit, what you find out is that these things should look roughly, again, some constant that depends on, maybe it's just this, but these will look roughly like 1 over k to the alpha minus 1. This is where I'm using that alpha is bigger than 1. Okay? Oh, no, remember, I'm always assuming that my trajectory goes to zero. Yes, yeah, it does. Yeah. Yes. Okay, well, so from here, this looks very dangerous to me. I mean, this has way too much arithmetic information, so in fact, to make it easier, I'm going to invert these guys. So this should look roughly like this. So I just take my set and flip it out to infinity to make it easier for me to do my Hardy-Field arguments without getting mixed up. So, well, now, a standard trick. So if I were to start looking at the differences now, and the successor, I can subtract the next one off from the previous one. That's going to be a definable operation. Okay? So if I do that, since I've got powers here, taking differences is basically taking derivatives. So what I wind up getting is that I should have something like this. Okay, so again, I'm working at infinity now. This is just differentiating. So this should look roughly like alpha minus 1 k to the alpha. Downstairs, I should get this, which is just alpha minus 1 times k. And then a really easy trick, says that once I've got a sequence that goes out to infinity and it's the limit of the differences goes to a non-zero real constant, I know how to extract the integers. Okay, so now, a trick extracts z. So the idea here, now, why would this, of course, this fail for the log spirals? Well, in that case, this isn't going to happen. The problem with this thing is it winds too slow. It's winding like a power, and that's enough for the field structure to see the integers in there and get it out. So any of these things that have sort of slow growth are generally going to be problematic. Now, actually, I haven't even had a chance to explore the... I haven't had a chance yet to see... So far, this trick definitely uses that I have a nice asymptotic relation here on the error term. I think using Phillips Aronini's trick really would say something like, in this case, all I'd have to do is check that, say, the set of quotients here... If I just take all these guys and start looking like at x over y for the intersections here, if that's somewhere dense, then I get the integers. So if they're close, again, if they're close enough or in the right way, the integers are going to be there. So this works for wider classes of things. Basically, what I've just shown you is that if I were analytic at the origin, linear, purely imaginary eigenvalues, and the trajectory actually, and I wasn't a center, and I really was going to the origin, then I'm going to define the integers. And so, this, on one hand, this seems to say, well, this looks like very bad news in one way, right? I mean, so we've got these good spirals, these log spirals, maybe they're the only ones. Naively, I might think there's bound to be a lot more of these, right? So, but from several different directions, I find out that this is not a big problem, right? So if you talk to an applied mathematician, they look at these slow spirals and they just kind of shake their head, you know, what are these things? You know, they log spirals are kind of usually what comes up. And Daniel Panizzolo helped me put this in a way of saying that these slow spirals are exceptional if you're in a family of things, because they don't survive small perturbations, right? You destroy them very easily, whereas the log spirals are robust, they stay. So it's bad news in the sense that you're getting the integers, but maybe not so bad news in the sense that maybe we don't really care so much about these guys anyway. And this is just a model theoretic manifestation of the that these are exceptional cases in some sense, and not maybe not to be worried about too much. So I wanted to do these so that people could see this is the basic bag of tricks that we use here. Once you have the spiral, you can start. And of course, I didn't need to use this transversal. I could have used any definable curve, but the asymptotic tricks shouldn't be very much different. And this is sort of how this stuff comes out. Oh, yes, so I think Aronimi's result which is being written up hopefully to be submitted very soon I think should improve this improve the say increase the use of this because I won't need exact asymptotic. I won't really need this anymore. I'll just have to know that there's some bound up here. Right.
Just in puzzling.
Yes.
Right back here. Why does that line of equations there in pi gamma goes to zero?
No, I'm using the first, just trying to suggest that the square of the norm is decreasing. It's strictly decreasing. I'm squaring the norm.
Right.
And getting, I'm sort of using the first derivative test. Now, I mean, yes, you're right. I mean, in theory, I could stack. Well, I'm squaring.
Yeah, well, I've taken square root.
Okay.
Well, is
the.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry, the freshman's dream. Every ring is characteristic 2. Right? This is oops. Well, I have a cold. I'll pass it off that way.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. Yes, you're right. Yes. You see, it's never too late to clean your station, and I later than I thought. Okay, so let me sort of, so having shown these sort of basic tricks here, we have these log spirals and this d-minimality and all this stuff floating around. And now what we used this for a few years ago was to come up with the following result. So again, this is a theorem, and there's As written up, it's Patrick and I. Dmitry Novikov also provided invaluable assistance in the early stages of this in demystifying some Arnold for me, which I just couldn't read. So I could not figure out what was going on. But there was people helped out a lot. So the basic thing here is that we have a sort of trichotomy based on the usual split when you have an elementary singular point at the origin. So suppose I have F is analytic, and so F minus 1, 0 equals 0. Well, let's say it this way to make it easier. So 0, an elementary singular point. So that is at least one non-zero eigenvalue at 0. Okay, so then, so I'm going to try to, state it this way. So we'll go back to this R sub n structure. Oh, and gamma will be the trajectory, of course. Now, first of all, if F is analytic, if I shrink it a little bit and go to a closed ball, then it's already definable in here. So this is a case of what we're trying to do, right? So F would be definable in here. Then either this is, it's either d-minimal or defines the integers. And if I throw, the suggestive statement is this. The next to R sub n, the next famous guy expansion, that would be with the exponential function. And in fact, again, by this result of Arrhenini, here I could have just stuck in any irrational power, but the point is that, so what's the proof? Well, if both of the eigenvalues are real, then by normal form theory, we know we don't spiral, so we had to be FAF in, and we can throw it in. If I have if we have purely imaginary eigenvalues, then we define the integers as in this other argument. The thing that's left is I would be conjugate imaginary with non-zero real part, and then I have a log spiral. I look like a log spiral. But now we get to use that because it's an analytic vector field, we can straighten it out analytically to a log spiral close enough to the origin. That allows me to recover everything. And because I'm over R sub n, this straightening out process, this orbital analytic equivalence, I think it's called, is a definable operation. So I'm actually interdefinable with the log spiral, and then we apply the earlier result. Now, what about this? Well, adding e to the x, if I was O minimal and I add e to the x, I'm in the FAF enclosure, so I am O minimal. And of course, the other thing is, if I was D minimal but not O minimal, it would be because I had a log spiral, which would mean I would define a cyclic multiplicative group, and then of course I have log and you get the integers. Okay, so what we want to do here is take off all these other nasty technical assumptions, and this should just be true completely. In fact, I think this should just be true all the time, period, over any O-minimal structure. So one of the lessons here would be, first of all, we can't add non-O-minimal trajectories if e to the x is around. And with all these other things, we're still going to have to be very careful. So if we want to study spiraling trajectories, we're probably, the idea is to focus on these log spirals and really try to understand those structures because they're natural objects and they hopefully should be useful somehow. So there are some other cases where some things are known here, but they start to get technical. For example, I'm not exactly sure the status of all this, but one of my colleagues at Ohio State, Rodica Kostin, has recently shown that in certain of these nilpotent, you can have a non-zero linear part and still have all the eigenvalues equal zero. That's not a problem. In some of these nilpotent cases, you can also show analyticity of the return map. And so once again, you get the integers. And more or less, I think this is, in the end, what's going to happen is this will just be true all the time for analytic vector fields. So let me just close now by saying that because, again, of this recent work of, both Philip and Aaron Emi and my student Michael, these conditions, you can easily see when I go back to the business about the log spirals and everything, they amalgamate over each other. So in fact, this could now be collections. You know, I could have a collection of analytic functions, all having elementary singular points, et cetera, et cetera. You can add all of them, and then only one of these three alternatives will hold. So I think I'll leave it at that, because I don't think we should talk about trajectories of trans-exponentially flat vector fields when we don't even know if they exist O-minimally or anything. And even if they did, I'm not sure we should care about them. Thank you.